Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is Memorial Day, 12:05 in Chicago, the Wintrust Business Lunch now. And on Mondays, it's pretty much a regular for the boys from Chicago Inn to stop by. We could only corral half of the show on this Memorial Day, but Will Flanagan, the general manager of Chicago Inn, is here. Will, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
We didn't let
Jim come today. You know, we got to let the...
I think sometimes he kind of drags us down, don't you think? I mean, if it's the tricycle, he's the weakest wheel.
I want the ball. I want to take the ball to the hoop today.
Jim Dahlke is the flat tire, and so we're on our way today. All right, a number of things to talk about, and the first one is this university challenge, which I've been reading about at Chicago Inno, which is only the University of Chicago, right?
Yeah, so it's Venture Challenge Week. Every university in Chicago is holding their Venture Challenge, which is, they'll have in-house accelerators and incubators for their students to push their startups and their ideas through their program. And this is the week where everyone is debuting the product. They're showing it off. They're showing the traction. So this week was the College Venture Challenge.
Okay, so, and maybe I misunderstood that then. So it's from schools all around Chicago, just the U of C?
This week there is all types of venture challenges, but this one, the College Venture Challenge, is just undergraduates at U Chicago.
Okay.
So the new Venture Challenge, which is for Booth graduates, that is kind of the cream of the crop when it comes to accelerator programs. In fact, it's probably not even tied to university, the strongest accelerator program in the country. It's 20 years old. It's birthed Grubhub, Braintree. Some of the huge pillars of the Chicago tech ecosystem have come through this program. Over $3.4 billion in exits. So it's really important to what the city is building. But the College Venture Challenge is only 4 years old, and this is for undergraduates. And you can kind of see that. Whereas the new Venture Challenge is, you know, these really proven ideas, a predictive analytics company for hedge funds, a software company for restaurants. Some of the startups and ideas that come through the College Venture Challenge are a little more like joyfully idealistic. You know, you're not thinking about what will this idea IPO at, or how can I scale this across the country? It's really, this is something that I think should be done. And I'm doing it. So the winner of the College Venture Challenge is a company called Common Sense, a three-person startup that is basically tackling an issue these students are facing.
I love your analogy. So it's sort of like the lemonade stand versus waste management.
Exactly. Yeah, right? That's exactly it. They haven't gone through the program and taken all of these finance classes, and they're thinking millions of dollars ahead. It's really like, this is a good idea. I want to do it.
And not to put it down at all. It's just a different in development. And this is a great idea.
This is a great idea. So what Common Sense does is they're tackling this student debt problem that is, you know, really kind of skyrocketing across country. And what it does is it connects to your bank account, and it's for every debit card transaction, it rounds up to the nearest dollar, and it takes those extra cents and it puts it to your student loans.
Which isn't that new, right? I mean, there have been others. Say, I've talked to people who've had savings programs like this. I think there are credit cards like this that they'll save some of the money. But this is different in that it goes specifically to the student loan, so they're working with the student loan holders as well.
Exactly. It goes directly to your student loans. And here's some, like, just simple kind of math to explain, like, why this matters and why it's important. So this year, 7 out of 10 students needed to borrow money. And that average was $35,000. But when you factor in all of the accrued interest, that number jumps to $57,000. So the average student, it takes them 13 years to pay their student loans. With Common Sense, with the math that they factored into this, they're just saving $1.33 a day just by rounding up to the nearest dollar. But that $1.33 a day cuts that time from 13 years to 8 years, which, Steve, saves you $20,000. So it's one of those kind of like simple economics that just matters in the fact that it's completely out of your hands. Just use your debit card and this is helping you out. That's kind of, those are kind of the solutions that you need for very complex problems, the type that you're not even thinking about.
We're going to have Andy Smith on later. He's been on the show before from the mutual fund store. And it's the same principle. Mm-hmm. Save a little bit early on and continue to do it. And it adds up. This is your sort of paying away your interest and saving tens of thousands of dollars if you're able to do it. Now, so they're going to go into beta this summer, right?
They're going to beta this summer. They're going to start rolling it out. They won $15,000 at the College Venture Challenge to help them kind of keep moving forward. And they're going to be working on this, you know, while they're still students at UChicago. That's what's so kind of great about the College Venture Challenge is you have these amazing ideas and, you know, they have to do homework tonight.
Here's the most, here's the most amazingest part of this. They're looking at rolling it out so that the student's parents or grandparents or aunt and uncle can also make the same contribution, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So I would do that in a heartbeat for my kids. You know, just say, you know, every day when I'm using my credit card or something, round up. I'm not going to feel it, and it could make a huge impact on them.
Yeah, it's interesting. We talk about AI and all of these algorithms, and I think where kind of just artificial intelligence is going to really help is in the financial services space, because you kind of take just the human element out of it. You can program smart decisions. We know what it means to save smartly, but we don't do it because we're human and we want to buy something today. But if you can kind of program that out of your software, that's where I think fintech has a tremendous amount of promise, because you can just remove bad decisions.
It's called common sense, C-E-N-T-S, but it's not something I can play with yet, right?
No, it's not something you can play with yet. And then some of the other winners, too, at the College Venture Challenge were just as interesting. Mealflower, that makes flour out of mealworms. It's, you know, better to fight malnutrition. Story Arts is a summer arts program for students in the South Side. So, again, those are the type of companies you're seeing pitched through the College Venture Challenge, people who are just looking at problems in front of them and saying, I'm going to fix this regardless of whether I think, you know, this is going to do well on the stock ticker in a couple
Feeding
years.
The malnourished is a more noble goal than paying off my kid's student debt. But the idea of meal flour made of mealworms is a little tough to swallow. No pun intended, right?
Nice.
When is the first? Is it still the big one? I was apartment hunting in Chicago. October and May were the big apartment months. Is that still the case, or do you know?
Yeah, that's still, I mean, you can just see it. You know, the old eyeball metric as far as just looking outside and seeing all
Forget
the U-hauls.
Forget the algorithm.
Yeah, I mean, judging by just walking around and seeing U-hauls backing up into every passing cab, it's a busy time for
So them. Here comes this new program, I guess you'll call it RentBerry, which comes out of Silicon Valley, right? But they've moved into, they're expanding to Chicago?
They're expanding into Chicago. And this was a controversial startup when it launched in Silicon Valley. It got press, but not the great kind of press, because basically what it is, it's eBay for rent. It puts an apartment up on this platform where you can bid against one another.
If we want to move into Wicker Park,
exactly,
we both find this apartment we like, we go to RentBerry and can sort of outbid each other.
And we're bidding against one another.
Right.
And to their point, it's adding transparency to this kind of system that has lacked that.
Right.
There's also cases where, you know, based on demands, the price will come in lower. But the reason.
How many times will?
I know, exactly.
Right.
The reason why it was catching a lot of flack is, you know, the raising cost of rent in San Francisco is a big deal. It's changing the DNA of that city. So this idea that there's this platform that kind of capitalizes off of that is a little gross. But, you know, to their point, again, they're saying, listen, this is what's happening behind closed doors anyway. People are trying to raise costs and who knows where it goes. And this way you can do it online. You can do it against the people you're bidding against. And you can also get creative with your bids. You can say, I'll pay X more dollars a month if you lower the security fees. So it kind of allows for that negotiation element, which is kind of cool.
I teach the landlord's kid how to play piccolo, right? Throw
exactly.
that in for
yeah,
free.
Why not?
What I think is interesting about this is that it's not a search engine, right? I can't go to RentBerry, type in Wicker Park, and see what apartments are available. I have to find the apartment, and then the landlord would be the RentBerry engages the landlords, I guess,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
They send the would-be renters then to RentBerry to check it out.
Yeah, so it's not like you can just go on there, browse, and see. You know, that's where it differentiates from eBay. You can't just go and browse for lamps.
I wonder why not. I mean, you'd think that they would make RentBerry apartments available, searchable.
I bet they're going to get there, but I think right now, you know, they have 30, 40 listings in Chicago, so it's a demand thing. I think the fact that they're new to the city, they're if they said, hey, come to this platform and search for an apartment, and you see that, like, oh, I can only get – there's only two places available in Lincoln Park, I think, you know, the optics of that they're trying to get away from. But I bet that's where they're headed.
So they want to – they're going to be hipper than they are right now, so they don't want to show how unhip they are.
Exactly.
I also think it's interesting that they make their money not by charging the landlords – who are jacking up their rent, but by charging the renters who are outbidding each other.
$25? Yeah, it's, you know, you use RentBerry to close your deal. You just got to pay them $25 and that's it. So it's an interesting model, you know, and that way they can kind of walk the walk when it comes to transparency. You know, it's not like you're using them and you think that they're going to be taking a little bit off. Like, you know, what is this fee that I'm paying this service? It's, no, here's $25 to help you get this done.
What do you think? Do you think this one's going to succeed? I mean, if it does, it's going to change the way people rent apartments.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a market-to-market basis. I think it's working in San Francisco because you can have that. You have this crazy rent problem, but it's an affordable-ish market here. I don't know if you need to pit buyers against one another.
Yeah, if I'm a landlord, though, I love this idea, right?
I think so, especially because I think you're always going to go above. I know they say that, like, oh, yeah, you know, this is going to – sometimes it comes in lower. But the second you put a hot apartment against, you know, 10, 12 people, again, like, that's why I have bought old Celtics jerseys for way too much just because you see the guy on the other end. All right, come on. Okay, now all of a sudden I own a Kevin McHale jersey for – $212.
It starts to be competitive, right?
Yeah,
it's like at those charity auctions when you walk home and you've won a ski trip to Utah.
Yeah, it's that addictive part of e-commerce, and now you're applying it to rent. And I don't know. That's where the controversy kicked in, is because this shouldn't be. You shouldn't add the impulse by nature to real estate.
Do you ever think there will be a 3D printer for apartments? I guess there will be, because they're talking about 3D printers for. To build a house now, right?
Yeah, I mean, 3D printing is one of those things where, you know, we get a lot of startup pitches, and, you know, you could add 3D print X next to it, and we've seen it. You know, 3D printed houses, 3D printed cars, 3D printed offices, 3D printed people, I'm sure, is coming. We haven't gotten that one yet.
That's Will Flanagan, the general manager of Chicago Inno. We're going to take a break and come back, and he's going to explain to me in small words just exactly what it means to be 3D printed, because I don't quite get it. Well, 22, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Summer has arrived, both in terms of the temperature gauge and the calendar now. Everything is all aligned. Will Flanagan is in the studio from Chicago Inno. He's the general manager. And we talked before the break a little bit about 3D printing. Now, I do not understand. I don't understand it. I've tried to get my arms around it, and I think now this phrase 3D printing has become so all-inclusive that it means nothing at all.
So 3D printing here, this is the easier way to understand it. 3D printing it's layering. If it was just called this is layering manufacturing, that's all 3D printing is you upload a digital file of what you're building, and then a machine, whether it's a 3D printer or carver, layers.
Okay.
It starts in it. Imagine like just putting sheets of paper that you had cut to form a big object, and you just layer those sheets of paper on top of one another until it forms your house, your whatever you are building. But it's just 3D printing is a cool word, and it makes it sound maybe more complicated than it is. But really, it's all just it starts at that base layer, and it builds up. And it cuts the corners that you had uploaded the file about.
Okay, so let's say we're going to 3D print a baseball bat.
Yes.
And you would do that in layers? It would print out pieces of...
Yeah, I mean, if you were 3D printing a baseball bat, you would start, you know, it would start with that. It would almost look like you drew a baseball bat on a piece of paper or a piece of wood, and then it would build on top of that. So it would cut around.
And then it would assemble those pieces?
No, it would. So you would put a big block of wood, or you would yeah. you would upload it.
It sounds so
whether
stupid,
it's with acrylic
I know.
Or what. And what it would do is you would have the 3D printer, and it would just... It would start layering on top, and you would build this baseball bat. What you would really do, instead of 3D printing a baseball bat, there's also 3D carving, and that's where you would put this block of wood, and it would cut out a baseball
bat. I see, okay.
But if you were to 3D print a baseball bat, it would, again, look like you're just drawing it on a piece of paper, and then you add more pieces of paper on top of that until you have a baseball bat.
All right, well, I want to congratulate you for getting me as close as ever. But and that brings us to gummy bears, right?
Yes.
Dylan's Candy, just across the Nathan Hale lobby from us here, unveiled this big gummy bear 3D printer this week.
They're 3D printing gummies. It's really cool. It's, you know, you upload the material, or not upload, but you, the material, they have this gummy material that can get filtered through the 3D printer, and you can go there, you can take a selfie of yourself, and they'll 3D print your head as a gummy. They said they're going to be doing wedding invites, so you can 3D print a wedding invite, send it, and people can eat your wedding invite. It's it's cool, and it's funny, Steve, right? We were just talking about, you know, we're going to start hearing more and more of 3D printing, but, oh, man, what is that? I don't get it. And it's stuff like this that's going to really help. It's going to help people kind of look at it. And even though, yes, you're 3D printing gummy and you're not 3D printing, you know, a watch or a piece of equipment for a big manufacturing machine, which is where that's really being used, but you can at least visualize it. You can see a logo being printed as a gummy. And it, for the most part, it's kind of the same process.
Now, you had the Chicago Inno logo printed?
Yeah, it ignited a pretty hot debate.
Kim Gordon up in the newsroom was there this week.
We had the WGN radio logo printed. And actually, we have the video up on our website. If you search gummy candy on our website, you can see the video at WGNradio.com. And you can see how it takes shape. But I understand what he's saying about how it's done in layers, because, you know, it first lays out the logo, and then it kind of builds on the gummy, and we had an orange gummy, and it was delicious.
Oh, there it is.
So you guys ate yours? See, that was the problem in the office.
We got to taste it, and then we came back, and we looked at it, and then somebody said, well, what happened to the WGN radio gummy? I'm like, I don't know. So somebody ate it.
So Flanagan is putting the hammer down at his office. He won't let anyone eat it.
No, I lost. I just assumed that everybody would have been, like, we were going to have this kind of funky decor in our office, and it would be a fun talking piece.
You tech guys.
Second I got there, it was just like,
gone.
Oh, when we eat it.
We got to taste current. Like, it was
no,
pretty good.
Like, this has to stay forever. So we put a Twitter poll up, and we're like, all right, let's ask our readers, what do we think we can do? And we lost. I lost. Like, yeah, it was 80-20 in favor of eat the gummy, so I was disappointed.
We've got time for one last question, then. How did it taste?
It was great. It was great. I still wish it was on our desk, but it was delicious.
Will Flanagan from Chicago Inno, thanks very much for coming by today. I appreciate
Anytime.
It. Anytime. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. How about that? What do Chicago's Montrose Beach and Disney World have in common? They both get closed down when there are too many people there. I don't know if I've ever heard that happen before in Chicago. Certainly not on Memorial Day. Welcome to the Business Lunch, everyone. Steve Bertrand here, a little holiday edition of the program. Andy Smith is on a phone line, too. You've heard Andy before. He's Executive Vice President of Investments at the Mutual Fund Store and a great friend of the program. Andy, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me again. This is awesome.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're here on Memorial Day. I appreciate you spending part of the holiday with me. I don't know if you've got kids or my kids. I don't know if you made it to a parade. I used to always try to take my kids to a parade on this Memorial Day to sort of get an idea of what the holiday is all about.
Oh, absolutely. On Saturday, you know, with the Indianapolis 500 being here in town, I mean, there's a ton of stuff going on, right? So yesterday was a huge day. with the 100th running. But then the day before, they always have the 500 festival parade. And so we've taken the kids all these years, really, ever since that they were born. And, you know, you teach them to stand up when the flag goes right by. You teach them to take their hat off. And then, you know, as they get older, you're kind of sharing more and more things with them. But it's such an important day, and it's just so important to kind of teach younger and younger kids just what the heck's going on right now.
Yeah, it is one of those times as a parent when you can sort of enforce a lesson, and it's not always easy to do. Sometimes the parades aren't, you know, like a suburban Memorial Day parade. It's a lot of Cub Scouts and not that exciting, but it's good to get people up there and to see the salute at the cemetery and all of that. And
that's really the thing. I mean, you know, we had the VFW, we had some active military. This year is a little bit different, or a little bit special for me. We lost my grandfather here a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He served in World War II. Oh, thanks for saying. I mean, he had a good run, right? He was 95. I mean, there was a lot of living in those bones. But, you know, this year especially, there's just so much different that you're teaching in terms of duty and honor and service. And, you know, I got to admit, you know, when they were, especially yesterday at the beginning of the race, when they were playing taps in the missing wingman formation and all that stuff, it really kind of hit home this year, especially more so than any other year. But these are especially the types of things that you're kind of bringing in and teaching the kids. You know, because they remember him, and gosh, he was retired probably 45, 50,
sure,
you know, probably like 25, 30 years. But there's a lot of living in those things, but he had a lot that he was able to do. Now it's my job to kind of teach the kids what's going on here.
You know, and we talk about the veterans and those who survived, obviously, and who are retiring. And, you know, when we were kids, the Memorial Day had to do with Vietnam vets, maybe more likely Korean or World War II. There are many more veterans of foreign wars walking around us these days, people our age and younger. And, you know, we talk about health benefits for vets. What's their retirement benefit package look like?
You know, it really is different. A lot of it just kind of depends upon what you're able to kind of be aware of, just like anything else. You know, you go to the hospital, you go, you know, do a lot of different things. You have to have somebody kind of acting as your, I don't want to say surrogate, but you really have to have somebody looking out for you to know what all is available, because if there's not somebody out there asking questions for your particular situation, I mean, you take my grandfather, for example. I mean, he retired at like 55, died at 95. So good Lord, I mean, this guy had to be retired for 40 years. There were a lot of things that he was kind of building in, but those were the days when you really kind of knew what was going on. Right now, there's just so many different things, so many things that you got to plan for. If you don't have somebody kind of by your side looking out for you, there's a lot of things that you could be missing.
Yeah, does a veteran get a survivable pension?
survivable with quotation marks around it. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff. I mean, my grandpa had Social Security, he had pension. But, I mean, this is the guy who really kind of, you know, this was deferred gratification. I mean, he saved and saved and saved, really kind of scrimped all along so that, I mean, it was a different environment back then, right? I mean, you had some pension from work, you had some military pension, Social Security was a little bit different.
Things were much more, I was going to just say, things were much more set, much more reliable.
Absolutely. So you talk about defined contribution, which is like a 401k. His generation was more defined benefit. There were many more pensions that people were taking advantage of, just because that they were still viable, they were still around. So, but what he did all through his working years, he really tried to save. He really tried to put away, you know, put those nuts in tree and save for the rainy day, because he knew, just kind of instinctively, pensions alone, just with inflation, weren't going to get him through decades and decades of retirement.
Did you learn from him when it comes to saving for retirement?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you save and save, and, oh, by the way, why don't you save some more? So there's a lot of other stuff down there. I think the big thing that I took from him was that, you know, not everybody is going to be able to retire at 55. Not everybody is going to even be able to retire at 60 or 65. You really have to work and work and figure out what's going to be appropriate for you. knowing that there's so many different things. I mean, I saw it with him. I mean, Social Security, military pension, a work pension from Westinghouse Air Brake, you know, all these different things kind of built in so that it was not you're just going to get money from one place and live for four decades. I mean, you've got to really kind of have things in a lot of different places.
You know, one of the things I've read from you in our correspondence back and forth is the idea that you say one of the mistakes people make is that that 65 is this golden moment. If they can get to 65, they can retire. That's a bitter pill for me, Andy. I just want to get to 65 and know it's over.
Yeah. So it's, you know, there's nothing magical about that number. I mean, my grandpa retired at 55. A lot of people think that they want to retire at 65, but there's nothing magic about it. You got to base it on the important stuff. Things like what you think your income's going to be, what your healthcare costs are going to be, really what's going to be best for your family. There's a lot of people out there that just are not ready and not capable of retiring right now at 65. So they really got to find something that's going to be best for them, for their particular situation.
And another thing you say is a lot of people assume that their healthcare is going to be covered during retirement, and it's not always is. That ends up with a big gap when it comes to your retirement savings.
Yeah, what I hear from our advisors there in Northbrook and Oakbrook and Orland, I mean, the number one thing that people are misrepresenting and misunderstanding are their healthcare costs. A lot of people think that $50,000 is going to be the number that gets them all the way through retirement. But those guys in the offices are saying the number's closer to $241,000.
Now, so tell me again. I'm interrupting you here, but $50,000 just for healthcare costs or for retirement altogether? For healthcare costs.
So good question. So people think that $50,000 is what it's going to cost them to pay for healthcare throughout their retirement. The actual number is closer to $241,000. So it's almost four or five times greater than what the actual number is. So, you know, you can see if you're planning for $50,000 in your retirement plan and your actual bill comes closer to $241,000 over the lifetime of your retirement, this is the thing that derails retirement. This is the thing that makes people go bankrupt, that makes them go back to work because they just had an incorrect number that they were building into their retirement.
And this is why you guys are always talking about, and you taught me this really. I mean, I have a plan in my head, which really is no plan at all. It's important to work with someone and to write down a plan so that you know where you are and you know when you need to be where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, you know, when we sit down and we meet with people, there's a lot of different numbers that we're pulling in. It's not just what's in your 401k. It's, yeah, what's in your 401k, but then also what do you think your healthcare costs are going to be? Let's talk about your Social Security. Let's talk about any pensions that you have. Let's talk about any debt that you have, because that there's this magical income number that's going to let you succeed throughout retirement. And so it's really trying to figure out how to pay yourself a paycheck all the way through and not have to, you know, like I said, derail things, go back to work because you had some wrong numbers there at the beginning.
How nice that your grandfather went back to work on a part-time basis, but not because he needed to, but because he wanted to.
Yeah, I remember telling you about that. So, you know, we had a family business, and, you know, one of the nice things about being the father of the wife of the owner of the company is that, hey, you know, I'd really like to kind of do some landscaping work and plant some flowers and do that. Well, golly, he did that 10, 15 years, just beautiful, beautiful flowers and landscaping and trees and design and everything else. But that was because he wanted to, right? It's not because he had to. It's not because he was facing some, you know, huge, huge medical bills or, you know, debt in retirement. It's, hey, I want a little bit more coming in. I want a little, you know, I want something to do during the day. These are reasons why, you know, it's okay to go back to work. These are reasons why you can work past 65, not because, oh my gosh, if I don't do this, you know, I'm going to be eating soup and beanie weenies.
Right. It's funny that it's a funny idea, but it's working as a luxury. You know, it's going back for the reason you want to, for the companionship and all of that. All right, so I know at the mutual fund store you will sit down with people and talk to them about it. You got locations in Chicago, Northbrook, Oakbrook, and Orland Park, correct?
That's correct. So I've got a great team down there, all of the advisors. I mean, this is what we do. We sit down and we talk with people about lots of different things, you know, to build this retirement plan, because what we want to do is we want to increase the probability that you're going to have a successful retirement. So we have a lot of hard questions, a lot of hard conversations there at the beginning, but it really is trying to get people ready to think in terms of a long-term retirement plan rather than just give me the best investment right now or tell me what to do with my 401k. It's really a matter of trying to build this plan that's going to get you through possibly decades of retirement.
Yeah, and you know, if I sat down with you, I would say, Andy, just tell me everything's going to be all right, but it's not quite that easy, is it?
You know, I think that we might have have a couple of hard conversations before I say everything's going to be all right. Well, we might not lead with that, but that's a good point. I mean, if you're talking with somebody, if you're working with a broker or an advisor right now, and you get the feeling that they're sugarcoating things or just telling you what you want to hear, they are doing you no favors. You need to work with somebody who's going to have these hard conversations so that they can prepare you as much as possible for what you got to do in this retirement plan. If you don't, yeah, you may feel good after talking to this guy or gal for an hour, but they're not doing you any favors.
The MutualFundStore.com, right? That's the website?
MutualFundStore.com. You'll see the advisors there in Northbrook and Oakbrook and Orland. Great guys, great team. They sit down. They do a lot of stuff for you for your long-term retirement plan. But these are the guys that are going to get you retired and keep you there.
Did you pick the winner yesterday at the Indy 500?
You know, I didn't. One of my partners in the Indianapolis office was the left front tire catcher for Sage Karam, and it broke my heart when he smashed into the wall there in turn two. So, I mean, he had a great run, was in the top 10 going into the top 5, but there were some heavy, heavy heads that day. I did not pick Rossi. I think that's an awfully happy family out of California right now, but it was a great race.
Andy, great to talk to you again. Enjoy what's left of the holiday weekend.
Thanks, buddy. Have a great one.
You too. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Talent is overrated. How does your grit measure up? Angela Duckworth is maybe the country's leading expert on grit. She's a professor of psychology at Penn, and she argues that it's the grit that counts. She joins us now. Angela, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
So is that something you want to be known for, as one of the leading experts on grit in the country?
I'd love to be known as one of the leading experts on grit. That sounds great.
What exactly is grit?
Grit is a combination of passion and perseverance for really long-term and personally meaningful goals.
You have to have a goal. You have to have a passion to develop grit. That's one of the things that struck me about this.
Absolutely. You know, if you're a really hard worker and you never give up, but there's nothing in your life that you can say, I love this and it is important to me, then you don't have grit by my definition.
If you had to choose between having grit and great raw talent, which would you choose?
I would choose grit, and here's why. You know, you could be really talented and do absolutely nothing in something. I mean, you could just drop out on day 2 or 3, and then you won't have accomplished anything.
I think we know those people. I mean, I can remember there was like a string of valedictorians I knew who, you know, went to college and just never really lived up to what you thought they were going to have. Maybe they didn't have grit.
You know, I can't say about those valedictorians, but I remember in school thinking, oh, you know, that girl is going to really be the most accomplished one, or that boy. And, you know, those stories didn't always come true, and life's complicated. But I do sometimes think it's because there wasn't sustained high-quality effort.
Angela has written a book called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. And I'm interested in this idea of talent versus grit, because the idea is that you're born with talent, but grit is something you can develop on your own.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. So,
well, this is radio. We don't have time for conversation.
All right, I'll make it as simple as possible. Talent is partially genetic and partially a function of your experience, actually. I know that's not intuitive, but
really?
It's true. Absolutely. There's nothing entirely wired in your genes. Life experience matters. What you eat, who you talk to, the fourth grade teacher you had, the coach you had, all those things matter. The same is true of grit. So grit is also partially genetic.
So he was born to hit a baseball is a misleading statement. It's a partially true statement.
Well, it's interesting. We loved saying that. We love to say that Stephon Curry was born to play basketball. I think you could say something like that, but what you cannot say is that Stephon Curry was born knowing how to play basketball.
And what the nice thing, or it's not really nice, it's maybe a lazy thing on our part, is if we write off Steph Curry's abilities as raw talent, we're giving ourselves a pass.
Yeah, and you should go on YouTube and watch videos of him practicing his heart out. Nobody in the NBA practices as hard as he does.
So if grit is something that we learn, is it something that can be taught? Is there a difference between being able to learn something and being able to teach something?
Wow, that's a nuanced distinction for radio. But if you want to go there, yeah, I think there is a difference between being able to learn something and then saying, turning around, well, we can teach it. I think both are true of grit. But I think the most important thing to realize is it's not just from telling people that they should be gritty or even explaining how that might be. People need experiences. They need to actually try things that are hard. They need mentors. mentors who are supportive, et cetera.
All right, so I think we're at the point now where we've used the word grit so many times that it starts to lose a little meaning. So let's back up again and tell me about what exactly grit is and how people develop it and use it.
You know, if you want a one-word definition of grit, it's stamina, right? It's sticking with things, trying hard over long periods, trying hard even when bad things happen, and stamina in your interests too. You know, so many people wake up the next day and the thing that was so fascinating to them the previous day no longer is. And what gritty people are enduring in their interests as well as their effort.
Determination?
Absolutely. Part of it is determination, but also direction.
The is it gender neutral? Is a man as likely to be gritty as a woman?
There are slight gender differences when I collect data on grit, and they favor women. So women in general.
Are grittier.
Yeah, well, in my data,
they're
slightly.
Better in every way, aren't they, Angela?
You know, I can't say that as a scientist, but I sometimes have my suspicions.
It gets so old. How about one culture or another? Does one culture lend itself to grittiness?
You know, one thing that human beings are is cultural animals. And so we respond to the cultures around us. And I am guessing that there are countries and companies and sports teams that are grittier than others. It's hard to study systematically. But for example, it's well known that in East Asian countries, the importance of effort is emphasized more than the importance of talent compared to the United States.
There was the whole Tiger Mom phenomenon for a while.
Yeah, Amy Chua.
Does that apply to it?
Well, it's funny because Amy Chua and I have two girls. They each play a string instrument and piano, and we're both interested in achievement. So I think when her book came out, people thought I was Amy Chua. but, you know, I think that what Tiger Mom, sort of this, you know, philosophy of parenting shares with the idea of grit is that, you know, it takes a lot of work to become great at things. But where I differ is that I really think there's a huge role for kids having a choice in what they do. I've never studied a paragon of grit, an exemplar of passion and perseverance, who wasn't intrinsically, not extrinsically motivated.
I talked to Amy a couple of times when she came through, and the thing that struck me was about how she wouldn't let her kids have a sleepover.
Yeah, I thought that was a strange rule. I don't have that rule.
But you do have some rules. What's the one, I had one written down where you said
the hard thing rule?
Do the hard thing rule.
Yeah, we do have a rule in our family, and it is called the hard thing rule. I can tell you it's just three parts. Everybody in our family has to do a hard thing, something that's challenging, that requires practice, that requires repetition and refinement. That's the first part. The second part of the hard thing rule is that you have to finish what you begin. You can't quit things in the middle of the semester or the season.
So give me an example. What would be a hard thing? I go to school, I'm doing my classes, but the hard thing I think would be in addition to that?
It would be in addition to that. So my kids did ballet for their hard thing. I have a girl who's 13 and a girl who's 14 at home. And when they were very young, kindergarten age, they took ballet classes, and that's a hard thing. When the tuition payment was up, they were always given the choice to stay in ballet or do something else. And I think the third part of the hard thing rule is really important to bring up here. When they said to me, I don't want to do ballet anymore, which happened with both of them, they were able to choose their own hard thing from even the age of five. Nobody chose their hard thing for them but themselves.
Which is the difference in the Tiger Mom, right?
That's I think it is. You know, I don't want to speak for Amy, but I do want to speak for myself, and that is that children need to develop and deepen their interests, and they can only do that when they have choice.
All right, so let's take this to the, you know, this is a business show. Let's take this to the corporate office. Can a CEO or a boss develop grit in her or his workers?
I absolutely think so. I
mean, really? So it can be done in a relatively short period of time?
Well, you know, nothing's easy. That's why you need grit.